Stuff with Steve Huddersall on Radio City Talk.
We've let the dust settle on Everton's general meeting so we can get some rational thoughts together about it. And we've invited into the studio the head of the Everton Shareholders Association, John Blaine, to tell us a little bit more a week on. Hello, John.
Good morning.
How's things?
I'm good, thank you.
Just how did you get to become the head of the Everton Shareholders Association?
Days gone by, I decided I would like to be a shareholder. You probably know that the shares are not easily traded. They're not on a market or anything. So you speak to a local solicitor in Liverpool who tend to act as a broker. You say, can I have a share, please? And you get one. So that's great. I think they're trading now at £2,000 or something each.
Yeah. Right.
And then I heard
each
about
Everton share is worth £2,000.
Yeah.
And how many shares are there out there?
35,000.
Right.
So, you know, the capital value of the shares is clearly a hell of a lot less than the value of the company. Yeah. And then I heard about the Shareholders Association and joined it just as a member, if you like. Then right. Volunteered to go for election for the committee, joined the committee, then got appointed to be at first I was the treasurer, then I was the vice chair, and then the chairman.
Look at you. So it's like working chairman. Your way up through the youth ranks to become manager, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Come on. We're being on the tools and now I've qualified. Yeah.
Come on, team. Is there something like 1,500 shareholders?
It varies, but there's about 1,500 shareholders, yeah. And the vast majority, of course, are in this group we would call the minority shareholders who've got handfuls of shares. Lots and lots of shareholders have just the one share.
Mm.
And of course, some people, like Mr. Mashiri, have rather a lot.
Yeah. they have a few more. And we'll get on to him in a moment or two. How much power do you feel a shareholders association has within a football club? Or how much of a say or an influence?
I think power, very little, I would think. A say, because particularly with our football club and with Bill Kenwright and in the past, we've had reasonable access.
Mm.
Influence, I think, quite a lot, really, because even though the minority shareholders, by definition, don't have a huge amount of shares in aggregate, then with company law and things like that, then we can apply some influence. And indeed, 3 years ago, that influence, you know, was exercised when we got the AGMs reinstated.
Yeah, absolutely. So a general meeting last week at the Philharmonic.
And, indeed.
And this is a big moment within the calendar year for you guys.
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How does the run-up to a general meeting work in terms of what you want to achieve? Do you presumably send something out to the shareholders collectively and say...
We have in the past, yeah.
Right.
This year we did very little other than, you know, making sure people knew it was happening and those sorts of things. In the past, we've collated questions and passed them on to the club and so on to help the club understand, A, what shareholders might want to know, beyond the normal stuff that you'd expect about, you know, how's it financial performance been and those sorts of things, and to try and make the evening go smoothly, yeah.
Previous ones have felt a bit feisty. They've had a bit of a history or a reputation. Raucous is the right word, but...
Energetic, yeah. I mean, in days gone by, I think they did. Clearly, there was issues and things that people get emotional about, like stadiums and be it Kirby or King's Dock and those sorts of things. And so eventually the club stopped doing them. Yeah, when the Companies Law Act changed, they stopped doing AGMs because they didn't have to. And that's why the Shareholders Association probably flexed that influence a little bit back in 2013 and got them reinstated. Since then, they've all been at the Philharmonic. And they've got progressively better, I would think.
There's that contradiction, isn't there? Because to be a shareholder, you have got that emotional connection with the football
indeed.
Club, and yet the meeting perhaps shouldn't have that emotional sort of influx into it.
Yeah, I think it works both ways, to be honest. I mean, I think some of the general meetings in the past perhaps weren't as managed formally as good as they could have been, which obviously got people with the power of the microphone, and then some people perhaps got a bit too passionate. But what was clear about the meeting last week was that not only was it formally managed very well, but clearly people who wanted to have something to say got to say it. And of course, as you alluded to, we had this new guy sat on stage and people waiting to see what he wanted to say.
Well, it was one of the most positive general meetings Everton have had in many
it was.
A year. And,
it was.
And that, you know, by no means was sort of probably down in some great degree to the introduction of Farhad Mashiri. Because...
Yes.
The model of the football club appears to have changed somewhat with his introduction. You've met the man himself, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? Have you found him?
I think he's a really nice guy, which I think is what Bill said on stage. But he's a thoughtful man. He clearly has a vision of what he wants to achieve. and that vision is all about winning. Yeah, I mean, he said to me when I met with him in the summer that and I think the phrase he used was he wanted Everton to be the posh club in Liverpool. Yeah, and I think he means the classy club. Yeah,
right.
And therefore, you know, the things he tries to do are doing things correctly. Building for the future. He used the word sustainability at the AGM. And certainly when the stadium comes around, I think we can expect something exciting.
Did you get the sense when you met him in the summer that the fans were very much at the forefront
yes.
of his thinking? Because there yes. is that sort of year where someone arrives at a football club where you think, what are they really about? What do they want? Are they about finances? What's their motivation in it all?
Absolutely. And I think he's clearly a passionate football fan first. Yeah. Mm. Historically, he's a Man United fan. Clearly, he was on the board of... he wasn't on the board, was he? He was a major shareholder.
He was a shareholder of Arsenal,
major shareholder with Usmanov at Arsenal. And he's been, you know, he's been taken in by Everton, I suppose. And certainly, his views around the stadium, Goodison that is, and the atmosphere, and it's just washed over him. And he's probably a Blue now forever, I would think. And he just can't believe what the passion's like, what the atmosphere's like, and so on. But to answer your question, underneath that, he's a rock-solid businessman, and he wants to make it successful both on the field and off the field.
So his business plan, if you think, because as someone who's made that much money and has sort of come into the club and invested in the way he has, perhaps with Everton, his business plan would span over sort of how many years? How quickly do you think he can realise his ambitions? What sense did you get off it?
My view would be his ambitions, and again he said this at the AGM, is about winning, yeah? And I think he used the phrase that the Premier League is the gold standard, yeah? Mm. So that would suggest his ambition is we want to win the Premier League.
Yeah.
How long will that take? I mean, if you look at when large injections of cash have gone into businesses or football clubs, you know, like Man City, I guess, is a classic example, then you're looking at the other side of 5 years, aren't you? So what we should hope to see in this business plan is year on year, the commercial performance gets better, which obviously then gives capital spend on the team, that the infrastructure type stuff, i.e. the stadium, makes progress and gets launched and gets opened and so on. But I would expect that he thinks in 3 to 5 years' time, we are regular performers in Europe, hopefully in the Champions League. And then beyond that, certainly once the new stadium is up and running, you know, take a punt at that. The number one spot.
He's setting the bar very, very
absolutely.
High, rightly so.
Absolutely.
In other words, he's changed the ambitions of the football club.
Absolutely.
Or he will do.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is he one of those infectious characters? Is he, you know,
no, he's
his sort of motivation sort of breeds it within others? Or is he...
I think his style seems to be, you know, that considered, sort of thoughtful... very objective person, so he'll drive respect and those sorts of things. Where you get the emotion and the passion out of, say, a Bill Kenwright, yeah, I don't think that's where Farhad Moshiri comes from. It comes from, I mean, he describes himself to me as just a factory manager, which is quite extraordinary for a man of such wealth.
Which isn't true.
But he also, you know, he builds upon that and says that, you know, you go back to, you know, sound bites like, you know, keeping the, you know, the manufacturing close to you. So I think he'll think the things that are core to the football club will be really close to the football club. So perhaps we'll see things like previous outsourcing of retail and those sorts of things will be reversed and those, you know, that sort of thing. And really quite a strategic thinking type character, yeah? And it'll keep people on message. Whether that will deliver enthusiasm and passion, less so, I think, but it will deliver, I think, really good business outcomes. And it'll be very hard but fair. I think he's probably that type of animal.
Steve Hothersall's kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.
Now, obviously, the stadium issue was head of the agenda for a lot of fans.
Certainly was, yeah.
As for yourself, ahead of the shareholders, was it also the thing which was dominating your thoughts heading to the meeting?
I think so, yeah. There was great anticipation and hope that we would have heard perhaps something a bit more detailed than we did in the end.
So you wanted an announcement on the night?
Absolutely, yeah, because the rumour net has been quite vibrant, hasn't it, over the past months, with people claiming that land deals have been done and indeed the Echo interviewing guys from Peel who said they expect an announcement in January and so on. So with an AGM in January, we thought, hurrah, we're going to hear something. And in the end, the CEO said 2 or 3 months away, really. But the uplifting part of the meeting then was later on when Bill Kenwright had the microphone, handed it to Joe Anderson, and they did a bit of a double act about how we're all pushing in the same direction.
Was Joe Anderson preempted with that? Was that something that you thought was just off the cuff, Joe being invited onto the stage, or was it more of a staged affair?
Joe was on the front row of in the auditorium, so he wasn't on stage. To my knowledge, he's not appeared at an AGM before. In fact, I'm not even sure if he's a shareholder. So
I was going to ask, is it right that happens within a shareholders association meeting?
I think normally you'd expect that perhaps, you know, the directors, perhaps employees of the football club and shareholders would be the people at the meeting. Yeah. The etiquette always has the chair of the meeting asking if it's OK for the media to be there. And Joe was there as well. I don't think any shareholders had a problem with it. Certainly I didn't. And certainly part of the uplifting part of the meeting was when Joe got on his feet and talked about, we've put the, you know, the relationship that we had last year, if you will, behind us, and we're all really pushing forward for this new stadium on the preferred site on the docks.
So can you give me a bit of clarity as to the relationship with Everton and the council as to how, if you like, there still is a stumbling block, indeed, if there is a stumbling block. What is the point in 3 months' time? What do they have to get over within 3 months' time to decide that Bramley Moor Docks is the absolute destination and that green light, yeah, we're going ahead with the stadium build?
Well, the chief exec wasn't clear about what happens in 2 or 3 months' time, other than perhaps we can anticipate some form of announcement. What I'd be expecting to happen behind the scenes now is that clearly the land is owned by Peel, so it's part of the Liverpool Waters project, isn't it? So that's nothing to do with the council. Where the council will come to the fore is a bit like they did for Liverpool Stadium, the new stand thing, is help with the planning application, with the infrastructure, access, transport, and that's what Joe talked about. We talked about there's a road going to go down there, there's going to be a train station down there, and certainly getting through planning is the hard part, as we found with Kirby, thankfully, when it didn't happen. So having the council on side and pushing with you, is really vital, I think.
So there's no discernible stumbling block. I mean, I use that word, but there isn't anything obvious. We're actually nearing the end game, do you think, in your mind?
Yeah, I think most people would be as optimistic about this as, the location itself on the banks of the Royal Blue Mersey is really going to get enthusiasm going. I think it's a complex project. The site itself probably needs a lot of preparation. Peel are hard negotiators, so I'm sure that's going on at the moment. But cautiously optimistic, I suppose, is the right phrase to use. Yeah.
Is it the premium site?
Absolutely. Come on, you know.
Anyone would want a stadium, wouldn't they, on the banks of the Mersey?
Wouldn't they just, yeah. Truthfully, I don't know whether Everton will end up with a stadium on the banks of the Mersey, but we do know Liverpool won't, yeah. So let's see what happens. But yeah, I mean,
you don't believe that either. And truthfully, they might not end it. That's going to happen now, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I think so.
I think particularly with the man who's at the head of it all, Farhad Bashiri, his sort of neck's on the line with this almost.
Well, what he's doing is, and go back to that phrase around sustainability and putting down foundations about doing things right and having financial commitments. The stumbling blocks in the past, if you go right back to King's Dock, 10, 12, whatever it was, numbers of years ago, that was a relatively modest amount of money that stopped that from happening. Money won't stop this from happening, I don't think. I'm an Evertonian, so I've been here before. So
yeah, you're cautiously optimistic.
Absolutely, yeah.
So when Robert Elston said 2 or 3 months away, you gave a little bit of a sigh of, at that moment again.
At that part of the AGM, I think the whole auditorium was thinking, if that's all we're going to hear, then that's a bit of a letdown. But it was all uplifted again later on when, going back to your question, it probably was stage managed to a degree that Bill and Joe did that little bit of a double act.
Which is absolutely fine.
And the audience, having just heard from Bashiri prior to that, went away quite happy.
Everything's a great stage show. Right, we're talking with John Blaine, head of the Everton Shareholders Association. Let's just talk in real sort of easy-to-understand terms financially about where the club is at the moment. So at the general meeting, was that sort of laid out in terms of...
Yes, yeah.
Loans, financially, the stability of the club. Yeah. Give us an idea, John.
Well, every year, since we've had general meetings back again, the chief exec has done an overview of past performance, financially from the previous year. This last year, You know, the revenues were reasonably flat. We made an operating loss, yeah, and that
why,
was...
Why is that?
Mostly due to shipping out the previous management team and bringing in a new one, yeah. So underlying performance was good. Commercial performance, again, was flat, yeah. And he then talked about the forecast for this year.
Commercial performance as in sponsorship deals?
Yeah, performance that is not match day income, so fans paying for season tickets and things. Mm. That is not TV, which is obviously pretty much gifted, if you will, because it's negotiated centrally with the Premier League and Sky and BT and those guys. So the rest of the stuff, which would be, as you say, shirt sponsorship, advertising, whatever, yeah.
So that was flat. So that's an area that Shearer will want.
Absolutely. And that's the area which has been fighting below its weight for quite a long time, I think. Two or three years ago, the club started investing quite heavily in that area of the business, in recruitment terms and so on, and hopefully we'll start seeing the benefit of that. And Mascheri himself says, we're just not good enough commercially, and we will fix that. And of course, within the AGM itself, we announced a substantial deal, or a couple of deals, around shirt sponsorship and Finch Farm, and there's more to come, I hope.
Just a little bit of breaking news. FIFA have voted for a 48-team World Cup.
Heaven forbid. Yeah.
There you go. Goodness me, that's a month and a half out of everyone's life now. I'm sure the Premier League managers will be sighing into their coffees this morning. As you say, obviously there was a quick announcement in terms of investment. So yes. This was it 78, 75?
75 million.
£75 million. This includes a shirt sponsorship and sponsorship of Finch Farm. These are separate sort of deals,
yes,
aren't
they?
Yes,
two deals, yeah.
But one of the deals has an involvement with Usmanov, yes. who's currently at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Is that a strange sensation? Are you quite happy from the outside to see someone who's got an involvement with Arsenal Football Club putting that money into Finch Farm? I know there's a different sort of makeup, if you like, of the land ownership of Finch Farm, sure, and everything that goes around that.
I'd be more concerned if I was an Arsenal fan than I am as an Everton fan, yeah. I mean, the business, USM Holdings, which he's the founder of, Farhad Mascheri is actually the chairman, yeah, and is a shareholder in that business as well. So I think that's an example of him levering his relationships and for the good of Everton, which I'm more than happy with. And I don't think it's anywhere near transgressing any of the financial fair play or cost control rules within the Premier League or UEFA. So it's good.
Almost an example of Farhad Mascheri nailing his colours to the mast,
yeah,
as well,
absolutely,
then, isn't it?
Yeah, no, he's put his own money in and now he's putting in his business's money as well.
So he's provided £80 million of funds to remove secured debt as well?
Yes.
Right, so this is money that he's put in that he won't command an interest repayment on?
That's right, yeah.
Well, that's a...
That's a man who...
That's quite a gift, isn't it?
That's a man who doesn't own control of the company yet.
Financially, when does he see, or when did you get the general feeling that you think Everton will be back on a more sort of financially secure footing?
I think the business has been getting more financially secure over recent years anyway, on the back of rising TV deals. Yeah, I think the thing that happened with those, you know, bits and pieces of, quite expensive bits and pieces of, you know, loans from different companies, was that restricted what we could do as a business, you know, mortgages on the land at Goodison Park and things like that. Sticking all that under a shareholder loan, which is what Mascheri's done, with no payback period and no interest charges, gives us a financial benefit, but it also gives us flexibility about what we can do going forward. And it clearly means that we're not going to ask permission from people about what can we do at Goodison Park when we're moving to another stadium, for example. So I think the signs are there that strength of financial position, or putting it on a better foundation, if you will, is there now. Yeah, and we hopefully see that improve when we get the results for the current year.
Well, it becomes more and more prominent. Right, on a ticket pricing front, some excellent news, really.
Superb
just in
news,
terms
yeah.
Of sort of freezing ticket prices, which makes the average ticket price, if you buy a season ticket, what did it work out?
£30 a game.
Was it £30 a game? Exactly £30
yeah.
a game. Well, I think that's brilliant in modern day Premier League.
It's superb, yeah. I mean, Everton were at the forefront of getting the away ticket pricing sorted out back in the summer, or whenever it was that the Premier League announced that. And the way the chief exec explained that at the AGM was simply, why should fans pay more to watch the home games than they do for the away games? So that's great news. And alongside that, they've put some payment schemes in as well, which means it becomes more almost, well, you have a mobile phone, I guess, and yeah, happily pay 40 or 50 quid a month every month so that you can make calls and stuff. Now at Everton, you can spend 40 quid a month every month and go and watch the game.
Was there anything you didn't hear within the general meeting that you wanted to hear a little bit more about?
I think I would have liked to have heard more about the roles and responsibilities of the new board members. Yeah.
Who are?
Well, Denise Baxendale came onto the board. Of course, Robert Elston joined the board. Roseanne Sev, who's the representative of Mr. Mashiri. Keith Harris. Yeah. Those guys were all up on stage. And it would be nice to know what their remit is as part of the board. We got a bit of an overview of their backgrounds. But their portfolios, if you like, weren't completely clear.
Right, OK. So you want to know what they're doing to help Everton make that next step, the progression?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I mean, we can all work it out for ourselves if we look at the people and say what their backgrounds are, and we can assume what we think they're going to be doing, yeah? But it would have been nice just to get an overview of that.
Finally,
that's nitpicking, I think. So.
Well, yeah. So finally, if you look back on it last week, massive success.
Absolutely.
And you almost feel like you're in a new dawn now.
Absolutely.
You just want to hear that news within 3 months. You don't want that to be another false
I want to
storm.
Hear some player acquisitions first in a few weeks. And
was anything said about the playing side of things?
There was an interview with Steve Walsh and Ronald Koeman on stage, which Dan Griffiths did. Mm. And that was all pretty vanilla stuff about how they work together. And yes, we're trying to make the team better and so on. But nothing specific, no.
Right, so nothing absolutely nailed down in terms of sort of signings or that.
We'll know in the next 2 or 3 weeks, won't we?
Yeah. You expecting a signing?
Yeah, yeah. Probably today, I hope, yeah.
Yeah, Schneidlin?
I hope that's going to happen.
Has that been done already?
Well, it's been done about 5 times in the last week, hasn't it? So one of them's got to be right. He's had about 10 medicals, I think. So.
Absolutely brilliant. Look, I really do hope this is the year we hear of the confirmation of the stadium.
You and me both, yeah.
How many years would that take to build?
3 to 4 years, I would think, from, you know, when they...
With road infrastructure.
Yeah, so it's, I think, 2021 season or something before we can even think about being in there.
Goodness me. And just a final thought. Obviously, you're head of the Everton Shareholders Association. I take it you can't release more shares, or can you? Or how does that work?
The board could agree to issue more shares. And, you know, back in the days of Peter Johnson, that, of course, happened. When I spoke with Mashiri and Bill Kenwright, he said he had no intention of doing that at this time. And that would be a way of raising capital, of course, just by just producing more shares.
Right.
But he didn't have any intention of doing that just yet.
The kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.